Broadcasting and streaming worldwide from the Golf Club Studios, it's the Golf Club Radio Show with Danielle Tucker.
Hi, Danielle. It's Ben Crenshaw.
Yeah, Ben, good morning. It is September 11th. And boy, you know, doesn't it bring... I mean, okay, this is one of 3 days in living history, in our minds, hearts, and our psyche. There was the attack on Pearl Harbor that, for the United States, triggered World War II. And we were strafed in Kaimuki as they stood up on the mountains and watched the bombs falling at Pearl Harbor. There's the day President Kennedy was assassinated. I know exactly where I was. And there is the day the United States was attacked with four passenger jets, two targeting the World Trade Center, one the Pentagon, and the fourth, the U.S. Capitol building. Because of the united work of the passengers and the crew, that plane did not make it to its intended target. It plowed into a field in Somerset County, Pennsylvania. Remember where you were? What you were doing? It was very early in Hawaii. As those attacks were happening, I was blissfully driving to work. I'd been watching CNN, getting ready for the newscast that I was going to do, the show I was going to do. It was a quiet news day until I walked into the newsroom. The world, as I knew it, exploded, and it kept exploding. The plane had gone into one of the towers, and then that was bad. No, a second plane. When a second plane? I couldn't believe my eyes. Everything, the trust, I mean, before my eyes, everything shattered. That's New York City. I was on the air on September 11th for 15 hours until my supervisor told me it was time to stop. There was nothing more to say. There was no more news coming out that day. The next day, you know, I felt like a betrayer. I felt like I had left everything. I shouldn't be leaving. There's so much going on in that city. I can't just walk away. Well, the next day I was ready to come back and follow the story and do what I could to inform everyone. Well, the staff of the radio station was fired when I got to work. We were called in 10 o'clock in the morning, and the owners, apparently, they were devastated by what happened. They didn't want to have anything to do with the world any longer, and they wanted out. Well, 20 years later, here we are. Have we healed as a planet, as people living together on the same little orb in the midst of this giant universe? No. So, you know, it's wonderful. I was watching mesmerized as the networks were all the people, some of them related. They would call out the names of everyone, and some couldn't contain the emotions that were welling up. Frankly, it was very good to hear it. It was very sad, but it was sad in a good way that we're still remembering all the people, the heroes, the people who had no idea what happened to them in that moment, lucky for them. It was good remembering, and we'll always remember. So this is the Golf Club, and we're going to take it from here, and we're going to move forward because that's what we do, right? We get on with it. And we've got what Ron Syrak called the best writer in his generation, period. End of story. Jaime Diaz is with us after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Streaming worldwide from sunny Hawaii, it's Danielle Tucker's The Golf Club Radio Show. Brought to you by these fine sponsors. MD Restoration. Water, flood water, broken pipe cleanup. Call 24/7. Licensed contractors too. Raynor Garage Doors. Steel, aluminum, and wood. Ready to hang or custom made. Sales and service. That's Raynor Doors. Aloha Power Equipment's new mega store is now open across from Costco Iwile. We put power at your fingertips. Aloha Power Equipment's Waipahu store and now in Iwile. And now, here's Danielle Tucker.
One of the most respected voices in the game, stemming from his more than 30 years of experience covering the golf industry, most recently as editor-in-chief of Golf World, senior writer at Golf Digest, Jaime Diaz is now on Golf Channel. And welcome into the clubhouse, Jaime.
Hi, Danielle. Nice talking to you.
It's good talking to you. Where were you on September 11th?
Oh, gosh, I was at my home. I lived in Temecula, California. It was about 9 in the morning, and watching the Today Show and just shocked at the sight of those planes hitting the building, and kind of knowing intuitively, like everybody, that, gee, our lives are going to be different going forward here. We don't know how, but this is, as you said, about Pearl Harbor and about President Kennedy's assassination, life-changing, earth-changing. And I think that's all borne out. Here we are 20 years later, and it's still with us.
Yes. Yeah, it's still with us, and the whole situation is still with us. And sometimes, you know, not to go off on too much of a rant, but sometimes I think, you know, we just need to take care of our little patch. That's what we need to do, take care of each other, our little patch, and hope that that all spreads out. You know, and we all become a little bit happier and wiser in the process of taking care of our families, our extended families, and the ground we stand on. You grew up in San Francisco. I have this little birdie who is telling me these things, a mutual friend. And I said, you know, Ron Cyrak, I'm not sure. This is my first time talking to someone I respect so much, and I have read for so long, and now I get to listen to your insight, Jaime, on Golf Channel, and you always get to the soul, the meat inside the person. You seem to have an intuition that is wonderful, but this is not like, that's not the kind of question I have right now. What role did public golf play in San Francisco in developing so many great players?
Oh, wow. Well, thanks for those very nice comments. Overly flattering, but thank you. I think San Francisco, in many ways, maybe because it is kind of an outdoor-oriented city, and they didn't have, you know, a lot of professional sports. Golf was a huge pastime for just the general citizenry. Golf's always been a pretty small demographic, but public golf in San Francisco seemed to work really well because the topography and the parks department there really had land developed for public golf, and it was just the climate and the sort of the energy in that city, especially in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, golf became something where and they had a city championship that they started very early. In the 20s, that was a big deal. So a lot of people played golf, and, you know, life was simpler then, and the golf courses weren't overrun, and it was because it was public golf, it was affordable. There were a lot of blue-collar people that played golf, and I think it just created a culture of a lot of good players, but also just golf being accepted as a really kind of fun pastime.
That's wonderful. It kind of reminds you what you're saying. It reminds me of Hawaii. We have a whole lot of really good players, and they've been nurtured here, and the young ones come along, and they get taught by their fathers or their uncles, and they become very good players. But we haven't had anyone who's actually sort of broken through to the big time. What does it take to do that?
Well, it takes exposure to the highest competition and learning what, you know, you may be missing and emulating the things that you aspire to in the best. San Francisco had that for a fairly brief moment in time in the 40s and 50s and most of the 60s. And you saw Johnny Miller and Bob Rosberg and Ken Venturi. They came out of that environment. But in general now, it seems like kids almost always need to track fairly early in tournament golf and develop that way to reach the highest level, to separate themselves from the from the really good and to become, you know, special. And, you know, that's become less of a local situation and more of a national situation in America. And I think the isolated locations still produce a lot of great golf in Texas and certainly in California. San Diego's had always a great junior golf program. But you don't necessarily see a concentration from one place anymore. It's who's ever exceptional. And then, you know, resources are made available for that person to play nationally in AJGA events and then, you know, through college. And it's almost its own infrastructure apart from geography. And, you know, I think that's probably the model in most sports now. You know, national federations and tennis, we see the U.S. Open being played right now, and you know, the Russians and countries that weren't necessarily tennis-oriented now are, because there's been a national effort, and I think golf kind of, in the United States, without being formalized, is that way.
Yeah, when you said, in such a few words, resources made available, that's a major statement, and so many people wish those resources would be made available to them to be able to travel to these great places, stay in these great places, and play in the ASJGA and just experience it. How do they go about getting those resources? Is it family in Hawaii does so much of that? There's only so much family can do, though. Who steps in for others?
Well, it does take money down the line. I hope what really happens is golf will be made more accessible to juniors in as broad a platform as possible. One program I like to talk about is called Youth on Course, in which philanthropic money is used to buy starting times at public courses and then given back to kids for, you know, maybe $5 for 18 holes, and then maybe, you know, very little for hitting golf balls. And so essentially golf becomes a place where they can go develop without any real cost financially and total access. And that's really how great players develop. I think childhood is the most formative time. The mind is more plastic and it takes in, you know, imitation of other good players. And that's generally how we've seen hotbeds of golf develop.
Yeah,
and once that starts, I think the enthusiasm from the one percenters, who so many of them play golf, they give their money to things like the First Tee or Youth on Course or AJGA. And then philanthropically, the money is there. But I think there has to be a sense that this is really going towards people who have made golf from childhood their ambition. And so there becomes this excitement to let's foster this. And I think that's the way it's gone. I mean, the PGA of America has done a great job and USGA, but the money has to come in many cases from private sources. And fortunately in golf, there's a lot of rich people.
Yes. And you see a kid who's really dedicated and then you take them underneath your wing. The rich people do, that is, when I say we. And college, the college feeder into the mini tours, into the bigger tours. College has become a major aspect of that, hasn't it?
It has, and as we're seeing, the players are getting better younger. And, you know, our Ryder Cup team right now is, you know, the guys carrying the team are in their 20s. And I think the oldest player, well, DJ's the oldest player, Dustin Johnson, is, and he's 37. But most are in their 20s, you know, the Xander Shoffleys and the Jordan Spieths and the Justin Thomases and Patrick Cantleys, Bryson DeChambeau, Colin Morikawa, those are all young guys. And they got good quickly because they got into this pipeline at a relatively young age, you know, say relatively at a young age, you know, probably 10, 11, 12 years old, and they've been playing at the highest level ever since. And college was just another stepping stone, and some of them were good enough to even skip, you know, as you say, mini tours and even the Korn Ferry Tour.
Yeah.
And get right out on tour. So, you know, college makes a big statement now in terms of shaping people, not just in their games, but in their maturity. You see people, young players who are really ready, not just with their games, but handling all the stuff that's coming at them once they become successful pros.
Okay, so you brought up the Ryder Cup. I'm really glad. European Tour versus PGA Tour versus United States team. I got to ask you about the chemistry, because I figure, you know, Jaime Diaz, when I talked about your intuition, I wasn't flattering you. I'm serious about that. You have a way about getting down to the inner core. So I want to talk to you about the chemistry. You know, it's like we watch the Europeans. They're on paper, they're not the great players that we talk about all the time, the ones who are making $10 million because they won one tournament on the PGA Tour. They're working hard. Some make it here, some don't win here, but they make a lot of money not even winning here. So as we see in a Solheim Cup, Europeans won. If you had said, you know, I'm going to bet on the European team, a lot of people say, yeah, but look at this, Nelly Korda, the number one player in the world, and all these other great players on the LPGA Tour. How can you bet? But the underdog seemed, what is it that brings them together as a unit that we don't see quite as much?
Well, I think the transitional part of the Great Britain and Ireland and Europe all joining together just gave a better talent pool in the late 70s, early 80s. That was a big thing. And once that started happening and some of the European players actually got to number one in the world, Seve Ballesteros and Bernard Langer and Sandy Lyle and Nick Faldo, there was and the Europeans started actually winning Ryder Cups for the first time, you know, in 20 years, 30 years, and they'd only won a couple.
Right.
In that. Once that started happening, I think the identity of the Ryder Cup was like, well, where are the best players in the world? Are they in Europe or in the United States? And that was really a point of discussion in the 80s and 90s. It stopped as the PGA Tour became, you know, the primary world tour, so to speak, and most of the good European players played on the PGA Tour. So I don't think it now decides that issue, but there's still the sense among European players that we want to show America. You know, they're the ones who are the perpetual underdogs because America is still the place where the greatest golf is played on the PGA Tour in general. And so they have something to prove, and there's a kind of a nothing-to-lose attitude about it, because if we lose, well, we've still been second place in most people's minds. And conversely, the pressure's on the Americans. So I always thought the chemistry sort of favored the Europeans in terms of where the pressure lies. And now I think, you know, that camaraderie, people talk about it a lot because in Europe, guys travel together a lot. They stay at the same places. On the American Tour, you know, there's enough money that people create their own bubbles of sort of their own team. And maybe there's not quite as much interaction or as much closeness, and maybe there's actually more competitiveness between the players, and so it's harder to get closer. That's a real intangible. It's hard to measure that, but Europe winning so often recently would seem to say there's something there. To me, it's just that there's more uniformity of great players around the world now, and it's only 1 week. So, you know, a win doesn't necessarily mean, hey, these are the best players. It just means things came together for that team that week. And maybe it's because they get along a little better. I'm not sure. I think the captain sets a big tone. I think Steve Stricker, there's nobody in all of professional golf whom people like more across the board than Steve Stricker. So, and I think the vice captains he's picked are also people persons. You know, Jim Furyk, Fred Couples, Zach Johnson, Davis Love, very respected. Now you got Phil, who's kind of a unifier. So I think the chemistry on the American team will be very good. And I don't think it'll be about chemistry. Now, obviously, you know, the underlying thing with Brooks and Bryson and Patrick Reed's not on the team now, but he had been divisive in the past. You know, those things are things that I think really require some people skills among the captains. And I think Steve Stricker can handle that. So I don't think it's going to be a deciding factor. I'm interested to see how the Bryson Brooks thing works out. I would like to see them personally use this as a moment to end this whole dumb social media war and put them in the same pod, since they're using the pod system. That's the elephant in the room that I think would be dealt with directly. you know, that's a big risk, perhaps. I'm not sure. Anyway, I'm giving you a long answer, but I honestly think it just comes down to who plays best. And the U.S. has more players in the top 10 in the world ranking by quite a bit. And I also think they, you know, are at home, which is huge. The crowd does have an electricity, does have sort of an adrenaline rush that helps the home team.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're picking the U.S. side.
Yeah, I guess I'd pick them. Yeah, I hope it's close. I like it when it's close. I like when the Solheim Cup is close. I think it perpetuates sort of the, you know, the anticipation of the matches. And I really honestly don't care who wins that much. I mean, I kind of root for individual players. I sort of feel like the Solheim Cup, it's better when Europe wins, better for the matches. And it creates more drama when Europe wins the Ryder Cup. But I hate to see, you know, players suffer that disappointment when they lose. So, you know, I would prefer on this one to see the U.S. win because I like Stricker so much. But I hope for a close match.
Yeah, me too. It's great. It's great. It's great drama. It would be certainly interesting if Bryson and Brooks could be paired together. I don't think their tempo as a team would be good. Bryson just seems to play so slowly, and that would bother me if I were a quick player.
I don't think they'd pair them together, but I wouldn't mind seeing them be in the same, you know, practice groups, and just to kind of, you know, put to rest this supposed rivalry. Well, it's not even a rivalry. It's just friction. And for the good of the team, I think they do it. And I think for the good of their own situations going forward, I would hope they do it.
What do you think of this, the PIP, you know, the player, what is it called again? The one where they have the 40...
performance. Oh, gosh. Player impact. No, gosh.
Yes, it's a player impact program. Right, yes. And the $40 million to the guy who brings the most attention to the tour. It's...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Player impact. Excuse me. Sorry. Yeah.
What do you think? Is that what they're doing, or is this a real personal thing?
You know, that's $10 million to the guy who wins that, although we're not going to announce who gets it. It appears that came about because of the threat from the Super Golf League that was approaching players with who knows how many millions to jump over to play in that new kind of tour that they're trying to form. And I think it was the tour's response to say, hey, you know, we're going to step up here and be competitive in the kind of money and just show you we were responsive to that threat, and we're not taking you for granted. It was more of a gesture, I think. I honestly don't like it because I do think it puts the emphasis on the wrong stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I want guys gain their attention and fame through their play and not through their profile. I get it that it helps connect more people to the game because so many people are on social media. But I thought Patrick Cantlay said something pretty profound when he said, listen, when you do attention-getting things, you sometimes get the kind of attention that you don't want. And that's, I think, what's happened to Bryson to some extent. And I think Brooks has played on that, you know, to enhance his own kind of war with Bryson because he's created trolls who love to troll Bryson. So I don't know. I think there's some unintended consequences there that make it I think it's a net negative, honestly. And I understand that corporations do this in terms of saying, you know, if you have a really fertile social media account and you're promoting our company, that's good. And I think that's the intention that the tour would like to see it used for. But it doesn't work out that way. It's about people getting on there and not you can't control the message all the time. And mainly, though, it's not so much the message. It's just it's the emphasis and the effort it takes to create a social brand as opposed to the effort it takes to be a better player. I think that's where the effort should go.
Absolutely. I have so many more questions. Will you be on the show again?
Sure, anytime.
Yeah, we never talked about, you know, the year that was. We were going to focus on that. And I think we... I don't know. I have a lot more things I wanted to talk to you about. Let me just
too long. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. No, you're great. I like I like people who have something to say. Bubba Watson often does. And by the way, Patrick Cantlay is amazing to listen to. If you haven't heard any of his comments, make it a point, because the kid does have some very insightful thoughts. Bubba Watson did an interesting interview on Golf Channel about the time he spent at Solheim. He is a Ping player. He's close to the Solheim family. Solheim family is Ping. They're biggest supporters of women's golf, of course. And he said that he really wanted to see, as a supporter of women's golf, what was missing behind the scenes. He wanted to see what the LPGA Tour needs and how the PGA Tour could support the LPGA. He was talking about how they're partnering up with the European Tour, so why couldn't the LPGA Tour be kind of brought under the wing? Any thoughts on what he said?
Yeah, I mean, I love Bubba. He loves sports. Bubba's a great athlete. He's probably, and I don't say this without a lot of compassion, he's probably underperformed in terms of his physical ability. And some of that's because he's got some anxiety issues that he's talked about. And I think he's been actually a leader, just like so many have been in this new subject that's come up about, mental health in sports. So I think Bubba's just really sensitive to, fostering best performance from other athletes. And I think he feels like maybe women's golf, and he's married to an ex-professional basketball player. Angie played in the WNBA. So he knows about women's sports and the elite women athletes that don't get enough coverage. And I think he just has a sensitivity to that. And he wanted to lend his name and lend his, encouragement to those women players who, listen, the LPGA is doing a lot better than over the years, recently especially, than it was. And I think it's made great strides, but there are greater strides to make in terms of being exposed and getting recognized. And I think Bubba was, in that corner of the sports world that believes women's sports are undercovered. So it's good. And I see in the WNBA, you see NBA players in the stands sometimes and vice versa. And I think, that cross-pollination is really, it gives more credibility to both sports when they're supported by the elite in both genders.
Absolutely fabulous talking with you. This is Jaime Diaz, Golf Channel. Watch him. He's either on Golf Central or on Live From. Just listen. And where can we read your writing? Are you still writing?
Oh, a little bit. Sometimes on the website, I should do it more. I don't know. I'll do some more of it, I'm sure. And I've got a couple of little projects going. But writing's hard, and TV's a great challenge, too. So I've really enjoyed, sort of shifting over to that platform, at least in the short term.
Marvelous. It's really good talking with you, and nice meeting you. Jaime Diaz, Golf Channel. Aloha.
Aloha. Thank you.
Gary Williams. Yes. Host of Morning Drive for a long time. That's where you know that name from. A teaching professional, Ridgewood Country Club, an executive at a Fortune 500 company. He's got a new deal going on. We're going to find out about it right after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to the Golf Club.
On the road with Little Mike.
Nice door. Nice door. Hey, that's a beautiful door.
Did you sell that garage door, Dad?
Yes, Diane. Rainer Garage Doors has done many fine homes.
Can Rainer do other designs?
Our custom manufacturing means Rainer can build any door an architect can design. We can even use our customers' wood to provide a perfect match with the rest of the house.
What about people who just need security and privacy?
Rainer's full line of doors means we can provide a competitively priced door for every need.
So people get a free consultation, top quality doors, and a fair price. Call my dad at 676-3667.
You just gotta call my daddy now! 676-3667.
Rainer Garage Doors.
Aloha Power Equipment has moved from Sand Island to Edie Lay. Their new superstore is open at 500 Alakava, located across from Home Depot's Evile parking structure. Honda, Maruyama, Shindaiwa, Echo, Milwaukee, Steel, riding mowers, robotic mowers, chainsaws, weed whackers, generators, blowers, they've got it all. Aloha. Waipahu and now Evile. Power equipment. We put power at your fingertips. Aloha Power Equipment.
Wow, what a beautiful day. Let's go back in the clubhouse and listen to Danielle Tucker.
Gary Williams. And now Gary Williams' first news show is dropping on September 13th. And I'm like, his show is dropping? Gary Williams, welcome into the clubhouse.
Danielle, it's good to chat with you again, as always.
So the platform is called, this is all I've got from Gary. You didn't give me much background. The platform's called Five Clubs, and I was looking up Five Clubs, and I was looking, and I'm thinking, okay, that's a game people play. You can only play with five clubs. And then I'm looking at the Signature Golf Group, and it's a golf business management and services firm that provides construction. Is that it?
We're the Signature Golf Group, and we're going to do, in addition to the media platform, we're going to do marketing services, event management, and planning. And this is, the group that I've joined is a very successful sports marketing agency that's headquartered in Charlotte that has done a lot of spaces, Danielle, but they've never had any existence in the golf space. So we're creating a vertical business inside of this company. And I'm overseeing the media platform. And as you said, we are launching on Monday. So it's been a, you know, it seems like it's been a short time, but it feels like at times it's been a long time to put this thing together. A lot of tedium that goes into it, but we're very excited.
So tell me about Five Clubs.
Yep. Five Clubs, it's an homage to the original Five Clubs that constructed the foundation of the United States Golf Association. So Newport Country Club, the Country Club at Brookline, Sinnacock, Chicago Golf Club, and then St. Andrews on the Hudson in New York, just outside of New York City. Those were the five original member clubs of the USGA. So it's an homage to that, and it's with the premise that we are foundational, but with the expectation and the aspiration to grow a lot and to hopefully foster, you know, interest and enjoyment in the game through the way that we're just going to talk about the game. This is not going to be an individual podcast or a written essay. It's going to be a continuing conversation about something you and I value a lot, which is the game of golf.
Wow. So tell me where we can, can we hear it? How is it?
Yes.
Tell me.
You can hear and see it. We've got a YouTube channel, which is called Five Clubs, and on all the digital platforms, Spotify, Art19, Apple iTunes, you'll be able to see and hear me. We're going to be originating from a studio here in Charlotte, North Carolina, where I've moved to. And so our first production is this Monday, and my first guest is Phil Mickelson. So we're going to have a few things to discuss.
Wow. How exciting. Phil Mickelson and the USGA. Let me see.
Yes. That might take up the entire episode. But you know, I'm interested to get his thoughts on you name it, and he's got an opinion on virtually everything in the game. And I'm exceedingly grateful to him that he is that he's agreed to be the first guest.
Yeah, as a you know, he's part of the Ryder Cup team.
Yep.
Wow. How long is your show?
Well, it's going to, you know, that's the beauty of it, is that unlike, and I just heard you wrapping up with my dear friend Jaime Diaz, there's no rule book. We're going to go as long as we choose to, and it may be 45 minutes, it may be an hour and 15 minutes. We'll just kind of, we're going to play it by ear, and that's the great thing about having, you know, no restriction on time limits or commercial breaks. So it's just going to be, we're going to turn the light on and we're going to go.
You know, Gary Williams has been a radio person, too, among his many, you know, hats. This is what you're doing is like the ultimate radio show that every.
You're exactly right.
Yes.
I mean, we are lucky that we've got we've got some corporate partners that are supporting us, and you know we're gonna do a very natural kind of treatment of making sure that the people understand that we couldn't do this alone. But as far as commercial breaks, there will be none. And you're right; it is going to be it's kind of an unplugged environment. But we've got you know, again, it's going to be audio and visual, so you can see our, you know, our studio set, and but you can listen to the audio only if you want to. So it you're right; it's got very much kind of a radio texture to it.
Yeah, only it's what every radio person wants, you know, not to be fettered with all the stuff that goes along. Got to put this in there and that in there and this in there and boom, and got to keep that cut. This is fantastic. I'm so excited for you. It's called Five Clubs. Now, you can travel and do this, can't you?
Yes, absolutely. I'll be at the Ryder Cup. I'm going to do all the hosting for Sirius's pre and post game. So I'm going to be right on the first tee, but I'm going to be able to do my show from the road. We've got, and Danielle, the idea of what I'm doing is I'm going to do multiple shows per week and have the latitude to do whatever I choose to do and interview, you know, whomever I want to. But we are going to put together a roster of contributors, and we've got a couple that have already agreed to do their own programs that are going to be coming soon enough. And I can't wait to announce those names because they're very familiar to people and they are incredibly thoughtful folks. But they're going to have the autonomy to do with their shows what they want. That's the whole kind of beauty of it. It's like-minded individuals that have their own viewpoints on the game of golf. So it's going to be a lot of content, and our website's about 4 weeks away from launching. It's going to be very robust. We'll have new content going up there every day and a lot of stuff that's going to be put out on all the digital platforms.
So are you going to have writers working with you?
Yes. I am in conversations with several, and there will be the written word as well. I'm an enormous admirer of people who can craft words, especially about golf, and so there will absolutely be contributors from essayists and opinion makers that will be available as well.
Wow, this is so exciting. You can go anywhere in the world. You can do this. This is wonderful. It's like you sat down and said, how did you come to this? What process did you go through? Did you sit down and say, this is what I want, I'm going to go get it?
Well, you know, that's a very good question. I was very lucky that the person who's now my business partner had conversations through the years about really primarily about, you know, his desire to get into the golf space. And then we started talking right at the start of the new year. And I said, you know, here's what I would like to do. And he said, well, I think that we can do that, and we can do it in concert with doing other things in golf. And so we are actually going to create events, including two that will probably go to Pinehurst and Pinehurst number two next year. Wow. And we're going to hopefully create a couple collegiate events as well. These guys are very, very good at activation of various things. And so with my background in the game of golf, I'm going to lend my hand to all those things. But my primary responsibility is going to be the media platform, Danielle, and I'm gonna oversee it with hopefully the same, you know, gusto and desire that I had when I was doing what I was doing prior, and that is, you know, being grateful and showing that gratitude with digging in and telling stories.
Right on. I mean, this is marvelous. Can I ask you a couple of golf related questions?
Absolutely.
Okay, Patrick Reed is not on the team. The Ryder Cup team is, and you know, a lot of people thought, wow, Patrick's not on the team. Do you think he should have been on the team?
I don't think he should have been on the team. I don't really think, Danielle, anybody who didn't, you know, automatically qualify, I don't believe in the term snubs. I totally understand, you know, the sentiment among a lot of people because of, you know, the way that he is comported himself in this environment. He likes it. He enjoys friction. But I also think that Steve Stricker, you know, looked at his health. looked at the makeup of his team and said, you know what? And he's rolling the dice by saying, you know what? We're better off without him. And I have no problem with it. And also the style of play. I think, Danielle, that Steve Stricker made it very clear that style had a lot to do with the way that he filled out his team. And he's going to play that card, and he's going to ride the idea that I'm leaning on length and hopefully competent putting to win that cup back.
So he's looking at Whistling Straits and how the player fits that course.
I do. Yeah, I do. But I also think, Danielle, that, you know, Patrick is an acquired taste. And I think that, you know, the overall sentiment, I believe, in that team room is that they are better served to not have that ingredient as part of it. And again, I totally get people who say, you know, this is not a popularity contest. I don't think he made his team based on that. He's trying to build chemistry. And I think that he thinks that they are better off without him.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Okay, so Daniel Berger, Harris English, Tony Finau, Xander Schauffele, Scotty Scheffler, and Jordan Spieth were all captain's picks. Were you surprised by any one of those?
A little surprised by Scotty Scheffler and maybe to a lesser degree Daniel Berger. I think that if you look at some interchangeable parts, whether it be Jason Kokrak, Kevin Kisner, Kevin Na, Webb Simpson, I think that you could have made reasonable cases for them. But again, I think Kevin Na and Kevin Kisner fall prey to the style of the golf course, didn't lend itself to their skill set and their strengths. But, you know, in Scotty Scheffler's case, he's done everything but win. And I think Daniel Berger, I think the response to him on the last President's Cup team was very positive. Mm-hmm. I think he's got a little chip, and I think they like that. And I think that there are interchangeable parts. I also think, Danielle, that if you look at this team, the construct of this team in large measure could be the big pivot for the United States going forward, because I think Spieth, Thomas, Schauffele, Berger, Morikawa, those are going to be the stalwarts of United States international teams for the next decade.
Some people wanted a little bit more diversity. And, you know, it's a tragedy when a name just leaves your mind, and it's an important aspect of the question. He's doing so well. Young man who's been playing on tour forever, had a real hard time with pace of play, and then worked really hard to change his pace of play. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Kevin Na?
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, Kevin Na was not chosen, and I was a big Kevin Na fan.
Sure.
You know, I thought...
I think Kevin would have... I think that Kevin would have... I think he would have fared very well in the arena. I think he could have been a real irritant, and that every team needs one. And I think that he's a gutty guy. I totally understand people who would have wanted him on the team.
Yeah, we're having some interesting interference.
I'm just being on the radio. Sorry.
It looks like my next guest from Scotland is on her phone. That's Lewin Mayer. Sorry about that.
Sorry.
Yeah. And so, you know, with Kevin not in, I thought he would irritate the... When we talk about irritants, we're talking about how it would irritate the other side.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
For sure.
Yeah. And the way he's so dogged, you know, he's like this... Like a dog with a bone, you know? And he's like he's unidirectional in his mindset. You know, I mean, those kinds of people scary. It's like...
No, it would have been fascinating, Danielle, to see him in the heat of that. I think he would have been, again, he's a live wire, and I think he's incredibly animated, and he's dogged. And I get it. I would have been really intrigued by watching him and you know, the response to him from the European side. And I wouldn't necessarily completely close the door on that, not knowing the welfare of Brooks Koepka and what might have to be done in the event that he can't go. who that next guy up might be.
Interesting. You know, that's true. Brooks, is it his wrist or his ankle?
His wrist.
Yeah. Okay. And then we've got, of course, another team to consider, and that's the Europeans. And, of course, John Rahm, Rory McIlroy, Victor Hovland, Paul Casey, Tommy Fleetwood, who's not been playing all that well, are definites. What would come next would be Tyrrell Hatton, who's having a terrible... I mean, Tyrrell Hatton, I thought, was a lock last year.
So did I.
Whew, where did his game go? You know, it's like... It feels like me out there. yes, Tyrrell Hatton, Matt Fitzpatrick, Lee Westwood, Shane Lowry, Sergio Garcia. You know, and he says that he has it in his mind who he wants to pick. So he's got four, or he's got rather three captain's picks.
Right?
We still don't know who's going to get in from the BMW after this tournament is over. Do you think a Sergio Garcia and... maybe an Ian Poulter? I mean, a Ryder Cup?
I do.
Yeah.
I do, Danielle. I think that he is, you know, where the United States has a lot of experience in the likes of whether it be Webb Simpson or Bubba Watson, guys like that, but they have experience in losing. And that's why I think that the six rookies for the United States represents, as I said, kind of the big pivot. On the European side, Sergio Garcia, Ian Poulter, Justin Rose, those guys have, they're old lions of winning experiences. And I think that I would be very surprised if Padraig Harrington did not fill out his team, however it shakes out with the double points and all the turbulence associated with the BMW PGA, with experience. And I think that that's going to be one of the great storylines of this particular Ryder Cup. It's the length of the United States team against a team that overall, when you look at it, with the exception of Rahm and McIlroy, they're modest in length, but they're long in winning experience. And I think it's going to be a great contrast.
Marvelous. Gary Williams is now host of Five Clubs, and we can find him on the YouTube channel Five Clubs, and we'll be able to listen or watch on so many different platforms. I'm going to have to write all this down and share it on social media this weekend. I'm so excited for you, Gary. Thank you so much for being
on
the show.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. I always have appreciated your support, and I'm looking forward to getting started Monday with Phil.
Yay! I can't wait to hear Phil talking about... See, what's so ironic, of course, is Five Club is an homage to the five original clubs in USGA world. And I think... I can't remember the word, and I'm not going to say it, that he used to describe the USGA recently. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, well, it's going to be fun. Thank you so much, Gary.
Thanks, Danielle.
Aloha. We're going to come back. We're going to Scotland. Yes, you heard her. Louine Mayer. We decided we'd be better to talk after the Solheim Cup, and we'll talk with her about that right after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
Got a disaster in your business, high-rise, or home? Call MD Restoration, 24/7 Emergency and Disaster Restoration Service. We are totally COVID compliant. Floods, dirty water cleanup, fire damage repair, mold remediation, smoke damage, asbestos abatement, carpet and upholstery cleaning. Call 528-3434. We're also a licensed general contractor, insurance company experts. Need help now? MD Restoration takes the stress out of your disaster. Get MD cleaned now. Call 528-3434.
On the road with Little Mike.
Nice door. Hey, that's a beautiful door. Did you sell that garage door, Dad?
Yes, Diane. Rainer Garage Doors has done many fine homes.
Can Rainer do other designs?
Our custom manufacturing means Rainer can build any door an architect can design. We can even use our customers' wood to provide a perfect match with the rest of the house.
What about people who just need security and privacy?
Rainer's full line of doors means we can provide a competitively priced door for every need.
So people get a free consultation, top quality doors, and a fair price. Call my dad at 676-3667.
You just gotta call my daddy now. 676-3667.
Rainer Garage Doors.
I just want to thank all of our sponsors. Aloha Power Equipment, now, of course, on Alakava. Rainer Doors, HawaiiDoor.com. Go see them there. MD Restoration for flood or fire disasters. If you need help, go through them because they're also contractors, so they can get you back up and back together again if something disastrous strikes in your world. Now, for you listening right now, I have a Pitch Fix Fusion 2.5. It was named the best divot repair tool by Golf Digest for 3 consecutive years. Okay. And that it could have been longer because I don't have an updated sheet here, but you need to get one of these. They're so cool. And we have these marvelous tools that'll help you clean your, let's say, your irons. You know, you want to clean the face and you just can't get all that. This has got this, it's in your hand and you can really scrub, and it's got a little water container. So when you squeeze, a little water comes out and you can really, it's wonderful. It's Pitch Fix Fusion 2.5, the best divot repair tool. All you got to be is a ninth call of a, you know, to win. It's so simple. The number is 808-545-1111. Ninth caller, 808-545-1111.
Ah, here's the local rule sign. Keep it in the fairway. It speeds up play. Now, back to Danielle Tucker.
And now, let's go all the way to Scotland. Louin Mayer, Global Golf Post senior writer. Welcome into the clubhouse. She's also an author. Hi, Louin.
Hello, hi.
Hi. Boy, did you expect the Europeans to win the Solheim Cup?
Yes, I did, actually.
Yay! They were out in front for 2 days, you know, then it got kind of close, and everybody was thinking, well, you know, if the Europeans have going into singles, right? A lot of people thought if they had a nice cushion, then the singles match where the U.S. team might be dominant. But boy, the European team came on so strong in singles. Tell me about tell us about your impressions.
Well, I was getting pretty worried halfway through the singles. We got off to a great start, didn't we? And then suddenly the Americans hit back, and we were dropping points that I think that our girls would have been cursing themselves for dropping them. You know, suddenly they were missing a few putts. And then, you know, it was amazing the way that, well, the pressure putts that one or two of them hold. And I'm thinking in particular of the last singles game in which, now where's my list of singles results?
Was it Matilda?
I'm thinking of the girl on the last green who held a putt of about 6 to 8 feet to win, to make sure we actually, this is Emily Pedersen defeating Daniel Kang. And it was just an amazing point, that I thought.
That was an amazing point.
She touched that Dane.
Yeah, and the part that went in. What it was so strange, of course, is because at that point you had 14 points. And you only needed 14 to win, but there were several, you know, matches still in play. Is it hard? I mean, I've never been in that position to continue playing after we've already won.
No. We weren't thinking we've already retained the cup. I don't think anybody on our side, you know, was thinking like that. They definitely wanted to win it. And they wanted, they certainly didn't want to come out on the losing side of the singles overall. They definitely wanted to win the whole thing. And that putt Emily Pedersen hold was rather like the putt that Suzanne Pedersen hold to win, you know, at Gleneagles. It was, you know, it was such a tough thing to do, and but that's what Katrina really wanted, and it was just a terrific result, and, you know, what an exciting finish, and what a great match it was overall.
It was spectacular. The energy was amazing. I think there were 130,000 fans that showed up, you know, expecting 100. So it tells us that women's golf is definitely on the rise. What are your impressions?
I definitely think what you're saying is true. I think that men have, over the last few years, I've actually written a piece on that for Monday morning, saying that men have suddenly accepted that the women are good, you know, because they used to dismiss it, oh, they're off the ladies' tees, you know, they can't hit it as far as we can, they can't do this, they can't do that. Well, actually, they've discovered now that the women can do all of these things, and they're hitting the ball so far, so straight, and they just set a great example. I think they're fun to watch, and I think everybody finds them fun to watch, and that's men as well as women, as I'm saying.
Yeah, and they can putt.
Well, yes, you see, we never used to be able to putt, and that's not an exaggeration. I mean, the early television, the early matches which went out on TV, which, you know, they were almost embarrassing because quite often we'd get beaten and our putting was nowhere near as good as the Americans. You didn't see us hole putts like we do today. It's just amazing. And the Scandinavians are particularly good at putting. They've got a great attitude and they've been a huge, you know, we've got more and more of them in the team each time. And I think that the reason they're so good and such an asset to the European team is that they've been brought up playing with boys. And that's something that's never happened in the UK. I don't know to what extent it happens in America, but this is why most of our players are so long and, you know, they're so confident. They're much better than they were overall.
That is a great point, because whenever you're playing with the guys, you want to beat them. And when you're a kid, it doesn't matter. You think, I'm going to beat him, or I'm at least going to go as far as he goes. You know, so it really makes you challenge yourself, in addition, of course, challenge the situation. I couldn't agree with you more. If they get to play against the boys, then they do definitely have an advantage, because that changes the dynamic so much, and it really makes you push yourself. Just you play up. You know, it's like being in any situation where somebody is not better than you, but a better performer, and you rise to the occasion. It's a wonderful thing. So you're writing a piece for Global Golf Post. It'll be out on Monday about the women's game coming on. That's really exciting. It was great to see.
No, it's more about the men actually understanding that the women are pretty good now, and because they used to, you know, think of every possible reason to knock women's golf, especially in the UK, and it's happening less. I mean, it still happens, but it's nowhere near as bad as it was, and that's my point.
Okay, got it. And the next question I have is, that also elevates the LET Tour, because so many of these players have either started or still are playing on the LET Tour in Europe, the Ladies European Tour.
Yes, absolutely. They learn a lot playing on the LET Tour, you know, because they go to, I was just watching one of the LET events on telly this afternoon, and they're playing in Switzerland. They play at so many different places, so they're hitting different shots all the time. And I just think it's very good for them in terms of, you know, developing their games and their attitude. They're always having to, they have to do a lot for themselves. They're not just traveling in one country. They're going from place to place at the moment. They've got all these COVID rules to different rules they've got to adhere to. So they have a really tough time. And I think it does toughen them up playing in Europe. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. So now, who is the person behind the putting that's made the women so much better? Do you know? Is there something?
Well, I think it only needs one or two of them to start holing putts and the rest start holing putts. The Koreans, I think, started off, you know, the good putting. I remember watching these Korean girls putting one day and noticed that if they didn't hit the putts, they practiced six-footers in the middle of the hole, they didn't count it. If it was just going in the side, you know, they weren't very happy. And it used to make me laugh. And I realized, my God, that's why they are so good. And obviously, most of these Koreans, you know, were in America, but I used to come over there a lot and see them putting. You know, their putting was so good. And I think we've learned from the Koreans
to demand excellence. And it, so there's not one person or some guru the girls are working with? Darn.
No. No, I just think this was, you know... It's what we've learned from these Asian players who are so precise and, you know, their accuracy knows no bounds. It's just amazing.
All right. So on the LET Tour, speaking of, where they're playing the VP Bank Swiss Ladies Open at Golf Park Holzhausen, this is on Ennetsee in Switzerland. That's not too far from Zurich, just to give you some bearings. They're about going for their the race to Costa del Sol. That's the number one player on the LET Tour will then win that? Is there a winner amongst on the LET Tour, the best player? Do they have the same thing that, you know, the guys have player of the year, which is a voting situation. On the LPGA, they have the points list that then determines who is the best players.
Yes, I mean, it's not the final event, or is it? I haven't been keeping up with it, actually.
No,
we're all absolutely bowled over by what's happening on the tennis front at the moment. With this Emma Raducanu. Have you watched her at all?
Oh, amazing. Yes, absolutely. She's taking over a tennis. And she's 18, you know?
She's 18, and tonight at 9 o'clock on our televisions, I guarantee everybody will be tuned into that because she is amazing. And the nearest thing we've got to an equivalent, although she's not so smiley, but she's just as delightful, is Leona McGuire, you know, who did so well in the Solheim, didn't she?
Yes, she did. She was pretty amazing. Yes, she was fabulous. Give us some background about Leona.
Well, Leona and her sister... Lisa's the other one, I can't remember, but they were so good. You know, as kids, I watched them from the age of about 12 onwards, and by 13, I think they were winning the Irish Women's Open. One would win it one year, or the amateur, and then the other would win it the next year. They just took it in turns to win things. But they were very serious little girls, and, you know, and eventually, I think the Irish Ladies Golf Union got quite worried about these grave little girls, you know, practicing and then playing so beautifully. And they were discussing it one day when suddenly they heard some shrieks coming from some sand dunes, and there were these two, Leona and her sister. They were cavorting up and down the sand dunes, and you know, which really wouldn't have been allowed. I don't know whether they were at Port Rush or wherever they were, but you know, crazy behavior. And so after that, these women were entirely happy.
Well, it's good to know. When you said they're sisters, I couldn't help but think of Nellie and Jessica Korda. You know, that it's good to have some competition at home playing against your sister. I just wanted to do a shout out to Philippines Athia Thitikul, the leader with over 1,000 points on the LET Tour. Australia, Stephanie Kriasko, I think I'm pronouncing her name right. Finland's Sanna Nuttinen, Sweden's Anna Nordqvist, Germany's Leonie Harm, Norway's Marianne Skarpnord, and England's Alice Hewson, Germany's Olivia Cohen, and England's Georgia Hall. They're all at the top of the points. Also playing in the Swiss event is an amateur, Elena Musman, and she's 13 under par at this point on the course. And I find it just wonderful because in Switzerland, my experience is that golf was never a big deal. And to see some of the tremendous golfers coming out of Switzerland, although there are only a couple, it's really showing that it's the global game is catching on, even in the Swiss Alps. And so,
oh, absolutely. And I mean, you hit an you know Switzerland, but you know, to hit an shot from an elevated tee in Switzerland and have all this wonderful countryside, there's nothing quite like it. It's a magic place to play.
It is. It is a magic place to play. I want to thank you for being on the show, Lewin. It's really always a pleasure talking with you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And I'll be reading your piece in Global Golf Post. Lewin Mayer, I love talking to you. Have a great time.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, aloha. We're going to come back, and Ron Syrak is going to be with us. He just went to watch Annika Sorenstam play golf on the Legends Tour. And he's back after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
Aloha Power Equipment has moved from Sand Island to Evilay. Their new superstore is open at 500 Alakava, located across from Home Depot's Evilay parking structure. Honda, Maruyama, Shindaiwa, Echo, Milwaukee, Steel, riding mowers, robotic mowers, chainsaws, weed whackers, generators, blowers, they've got it all.
Aloha.
Waipahu and now Evilay.
Power Equipment.
We put power at your fingertips. Aloha Power Equipment.
On the road with Little Mike.
Nice door. Nice door. Hey, that's a beautiful door.
Did you sell that garage door, Dad?
Yes, Diane. Rainer Garage Doors has done many fine homes.
Can Rainer do other designs?
Our custom manufacturing means Rainer can build any door an architect can design. We can even use our customers' wood to provide a perfect match with the rest of the house.
What about people who just need security and privacy?
Rainer's full line of doors means we can provide a competitively priced door for every need.
So people get a free consultation, top quality doors, and a fair price. Call my dad at 676-3667.
You just gotta call my daddy now! 676-3667.
Rainer Garage Doors.
Whatever your trade, you need more customers. Filling your restaurants, buying your cars, renovating high-rises, using your realty company, buying insurance from you, putting air conditioning in their offices. You need customers. Get them by advertising on Danielle Tucker's The Golf Club. We have great quality listeners like yourself with ad packages that start at just a few $100s. Call Rick at 808-220-1000 or email him. Rick@RadioGolfClub.com. That's Rick@RadioGolfClub.com. Our listeners are consumers, too.
K-O-R-L, Y-N-I, Honolulu. We haven't got our ninth caller yet, and all you have to do is call 808-545-1111. That's 808-545-1111. And you'll win a Pitch Fix Fusion 2.5 named Best Divot Repair Tool Ever. Okay, we'll come back right after this.
Got my new book, 3 Tips to Play Better Golf. Practice, practice, practice. Now back to Danielle Tucker.
Ron Syrak, award-winning writer, Golf Channel contributor, PGA of America Lifetime Achievement and Journalism Award, author of the Vision 54 trilogy with Lynn Marriott and Pia Nilsson, and their books are Play Your Best Golf Now, The Game Before the Game, and Every Shot Must Have a Purpose. Pick up any one of those, and you'll really learn a lot. And Pia and Lynn are amazing, and so is Ron Syrak as a writer. Welcome into the clubhouse, Ron.
Danielle, thank you. Always a pleasure to be on with you.
Thank you. And now, okay, the Legends of the LPGA, the official senior tour of the LPGA for LPGA Tour professionals and eligible amateurs 45 years and older. You got out there, and how was play?
It was fascinating to see. This was a two-woman scramble. So there were 24 players, 12 teams out there. The Ridge Club is a fun golf course in Sandwich on Cape Cod. And, you look at the players who were there. These are just the Hall of Famers. I mean, we had Jan Stevenson, Julie Inkster, Annika Sorenstam, Hollis Stacey, Nancy Lopez, Pat Bradley. Just an incredible group of people to watch play. And Jan Stevenson and Laura Diaz teamed up in their scramble to shoot 13 under par 58 and take first place.
Wow. That is really something. I haven't heard Jan Stevenson play in I don't know how long.
Yeah, that's, you know, Jan was had quite the impact on the LPGA in a lot of ways, and one was she was at the beginning of the global growth of the game coming from Australia. She was expanding LPGA golf beyond the borders of the United States. And then she was the glamour girl of the tour for many years out there. And sometimes people forget she won three major championships, and she's in the World Golf Hall of Fame because she was a heck of a player.
Wow. Yeah. And now, so has she been playing?
She's been playing. There's not a whole lot of senior events for women out there. We've now have two major championships for women, the LPGA senior LPGA championship and the U.S. Senior Women's Open. She's played in those events. And then these Legend Tour events, there are varying degrees of them. Some of them are individual competitions. Some of them are pro-am. Some of them are two-person events like this. And she pops up. You know, she knows that her name is still a draw. So she's trying to do what she can to help grow senior women's golf the way she did what she could to try to grow women's golf in general when she was on the tour.
That's wonderful. So Jan Stevenson and Laura Diaz, the PGA's Charity Championship presented by P&G, played yesterday. Now we're going to go down the list. Trish Johnson and Laura Davies. Laura Davies has no quit in her, does she?
No, and you know, I think she still hits the ball as far as she ever did. You know, it was fun. I was at the U.S. Senior Women's Open at Brookline in Fairfield, and when she got on the first tee, I was standing next to the president of the club, and I don't know if you've ever seen, but the way Laura tees up her golf ball, she takes a wedge out, and she chunks up a bunch of turf. And then doesn't use a tee and sets her ball on that turf and then whaps it down the fairway about 285 yards. And as she's digging this bit of turf up, I sort of turned to the president and said, "Is she going to get a letter from the president of the club saying you can't do that on our golf course?" But no one would ever say that to Dame Laura.
I didn't know that. I mean, how many golf courses would allow you to do that?
You know, I think Dame Laura can do whatever she
wants.
Yeah,
there you go.
But, in the many, many years I've been covering her, when I first started to follow her in, like, the mid-90s, she would take the eraser off a golf pencil and tee her ball up on the pencil and play it really high and play it way off her front foot and catch the ball in the upswing and hit these towering long high drives. And now she's doing this other thing, which is like counterintuitive to modern technology, which is the sweet spot supposed to be higher on the golf club now than it used to be. But she doesn't use a tee now. She just whaps it off the turf.
It's like, drive her off the deck. She
yep.
makes her own deck. she's also a race car driver, isn't she? Or certainly an aficionado.
You know, I've seen Laura play golf. I've seen her play tennis. I've seen her play soccer. And she is one of the most remarkable natural athletes I've ever seen.
Wow.
She just truly, and I haven't seen her race a car, but I'm sure if she does it, she does it really, really well. I do know this. When they used to play the LPGA Championship in Wilmington, Delaware, as soon as her round was over, she'd get in the car and drive to Atlantic City to get to the casinos because she was pretty good at that, too.
Boy, she's amazing. Elaine Crosby and Kathy J. Forbes, they came in third.
Yeah, and this is an example of the other thing that this Legends of the LPGA is doing, which is, you know, Elaine and Kathy are two people who didn't make a whole lot of money on the LPGA as professionals, and were mostly had their income as teachers out there. And this is an opportunity for them to go along and pick up a little bit of cash out there. And, you know, there's not a ton of money in these senior events, but, you know, the winning team got $35,000. The Crosby and Forbes team got $16,000. So it's a nice way to try to give them an opportunity. It's not quite the retirement annuity that the senior tour has provided for the men players, where they're making a ton of money, but it's a step in the right direction.
Yes, it certainly is. Pat Hurst and Julie Engster, do you think they talked about the Solheim Cup?
I know I talked about the Solheim Cup with both of them. You know, we were chatting away on the putting green, and you know, I told Pat that I didn't have any criticism of either captain. I thought both captains did really, really good jobs there. I thought it was an incredible competition, and I think it just came down to the fact that the European team had no weak spots from top to bottom. It's probably the best team from Europe that I've ever seen in the Solheim Cup, and it was hard for now Julie and Pat, who are the absolute best of friends. I mean, for 30 years now, they've been traveling companions on tour. And they've now been captains of the back-to-back losing American teams. I think that Pat would like to have another shot at it. Julie was captain for three straight Solheim Cups. I think Pat would like to have another chance. It'll be interesting to see what the U.S. team does about who the next captain is.
Yeah. Well, how does one lobby for oneself?
Give me have somebody else do it.
Yes, there you go. Rosie Jones and Michelle Redmond, they were playing a 63. They split up 13-6-25 for their victory. Michelle Redmond and Rosie Jones both were on the LPGA Tour for a long time.
There may be nobody in the history of golf who, and I mean this in the best way possible, who's done more with less physical ability than Rosie Jones. Rosie hit the ball nowhere. Rosie hit the ball about 220 yards, and she won 13 times on the LPGA. She was a great putter, but she was as tough of a competitor as I've ever seen out there. She was a grinder, a grinder, a grinder, as was Michelle Redmond. You know, they were both players who absolutely maximized their ability. But to me, Rosie winning 13 times is really does not get the attention it deserves. It's one of the great accomplishments in women's golf. Because as I said, I remember joking with her once in the early 2000s, right when the solid core ball and the oversized driver came along. And I said, Rosie, you're the only person that the distance revolution has passed by. You still don't hit the ball anywhere, you know.
And, and she didn't clobber you. You're lucky.
No, we knew each other well enough that we could exchange a little barb.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Lizelotte Newman and Alicia, I don't know how to pronounce her name.
Debose. Yeah, you know, she's a teaching pro in Westchester County outside New York now. You know, the thing that Lotta Neumann doesn't get enough credit for is, you know, we focus on Siri Pak as the real beginning of the globalization of the women's game, and that's absolutely true, particularly in Asia. But if you look at it, two of the hugely important events in expanding the game, as I said, Jan Stevenson won three majors, but in the late 80s, we had back-to-back U.S. Opens won by Laura Davies and Liselotte Neumann.
Wow.
And Liselotte beat from Sweden, and they really expanded the game into Europe. If you look at the way golf changed from about women's golf changed from about 1995 to now, it is look, this year there were five majors won on the five majors in the LPGA were not only won by five different players, they were won by players from five different countries. You know, as diverse as Thailand, the Philippines, Sweden, the United States, and Australia. You know, I mean, that the beginning of that trend started when Dame Laura Davies and Lisa Lott Neumann won U.S. Women's Open.
And the true beauty of it is appreciating the game that's being played by people from around the world and appreciating their game and seeing it's just wonderful. I was thinking about that watching the Solheim Cup and the women and how they're playing. And they just have their games on. And their putting is amazing. I was talking to Louine Mayer before you, and she said, we couldn't putt, talking about the Europeans, and we couldn't putt, and now we can putt. And she thought the Koreans who actually, because they would get upset that when they hold a putt, it didn't go directly to the center of the cup. It didn't count if it went to the side. It had to go into the center. And it was that kind of, if you're around people who are doing that, kind of tells you, maybe I should change a little bit here.
You know, it's one of the reasons that I hear from professionals why a lot of them are leaving the flag stick in when they putt now, because they like having the smaller target to focus on, you know, which really makes you try to get the ball into the center of the hole. It makes the hole, it psychologically feel bigger to them because they're aiming at the smaller target, the flagstick.
Yeah.
And you're seeing so many now do that. That European team from top to bottom just putted lights out. And you look at Leona Maguire and Matilda Castron. They just sort of made everything they look at. And one thing to remember, too, when you look at that European team, there's a huge American influence on that team. 11 of the 12 players play the LPGA full-time, and 8 of the 12 players on the European team played college golf in the United States.
Ah.
So they've taken advantage of coming to the United States, which by and large has better practice facilities than anywhere else in the world. And the quality of competition in women's college golf has improved enormously over the last decade.
Yeah.
So they're taking advantage of better practice facilities. They're taking advantage of getting the experience of facing tougher competition as an amateur in American college golf. So there was a big American flavor to that winning European team.
Absolutely. Now, you know, we were talking during the show. I, you know, said that Annika Sorenstam played on the Legends Legends of the LPGA. And here we are, tied for seventh. She played with Susie Whaley, Annika Sorenstam, and Susie Whaley, of course, past president of the PGA of America. So what happened with them? Everyone would expect them to be the champions.
Well, you know, I mean, first off, I mean, you know, historically, one of the things that's fascinating to me is that Annika Sorenstam and Susie Whaley both were the first women to play in men's PGA Tour events in about 50 years, within months of each other. Annika playing on a sponsor's invitation at the Colonial Invitation, and Susie qualifying by winning a sectional PGA championship. She qualified for the Travelers Championship in Hartford, Connecticut.
Yep.
So they both did that sort of within months of each other. Annika has barely competed for 13 years, you know, and Susie doesn't compete all that much either. Of all these players who are playing, they probably have the fewest competitive rounds under their belt over the last decade.
Yeah.
of any of them. So the one thing you can't practice, and when I saw Annika warming up at Brookline for the U.S. Senior Women's Open, and I saw her swing, and it was like the same swing I remember from 13 years ago. But the one thing you can't practice is competition, pressure,
yeah.
You know, being out there and having to get the ball in the hole, you know, to finish out the hole. You can't practice that. You only get your game legs in game situations. And neither Annika nor Susie are just competing anywhere near enough to be ready for this. What Annika did in the U.S. Women's Open, winning that, not only winning it, but winning it by 8 strokes, just shows you what a competitor she is in that kind of situation. She played that event for one reason, to win it, and she did.
Absolutely. And I was kind of tongue firmly in cheek when I said, what happened to them? Because it's those kinds of expectations that must drive athletes nuts, you know, and we see them expressing that right now in this year where the expectations of people and then saying, well, why didn't you win? You're so great. You know, that.
Well, and you know, one of the reasons that you can't overlook here, one of the reasons Annika's playing in this event and probably Susie's playing in this event is trying to grow senior women's golf. You know, they know their present was going to be, you know, we might not be talking about this event, you and I, if Annika hadn't played in it. And there was a reporter there from the local Cape Cod newspaper. There was a photographer there from a Boston newspaper. There was a New England Golf magazine was there. I'm not sure any of them would have been there, you know, except for the fact that Annika was there. So they know that their presence is going to bring attention to the competition and help grow senior women's golf. And senior women's golf does need to grow. I would like to see there be a really, really healthy senior women's tour out there like there is for the men. The fact that the Legends Tour has now become the Legends of the LPGA and is partnering with the LPGA is a hugely important step in the right direction.
Absolutely. And when I was looking at, admission was free. Gates opened at 8. No parking on site at the Ridge Club, but you could find free parking at the Holly Ridge Golf Course on the first-come, first-served basis right next door. Free complimentary shuttle rides. And, you know, it was just like everything was ready for that. It was just a really cool presentation. And I thought, yeah, this sounds like something that would happen 50 years ago when the LPGA was just starting. And now the senior women need to get a chance to show their stuff, because just because you get older doesn't mean you don't have a whole lot of juice in the tank. Just look at Laura Davies and Jan Stevenson. Thank you.
Well, one of the really cool things about the event was there were several hundred people there watching them play, and there's no gallery ropes, so people are just wandering down the fairway with the players. You know, and there was a very old-timey deal to the whole thing, and it just absolutely had the right. And the other cool thing about it is the Ridge Club, one of the people who has a part ownership of the Ridge Club is Bobby Orr, the legendary hockey player. And he was there on the first tee and you know, posing for photos with every player as they teed off. And he was there to support the event also. And again, you know, here's somebody who's, I think he's 73 years old now and is a legend in his own right. And we're seeing more of this. I'm seeing NBA players standing up for WNBA players. NBA players and standing up for LPGA players. We saw so many men, male golfers, PGA Tour players, European PGA Tour players weighing in on social media during the Solheim Cup. We're seeing more male athletes standing up for the growth of the women's game. And that, again, that's another huge step in the right direction.
Great talking with you, Ron. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me on, Danielle. See you down the road.
Aloha. Thank you to our sponsors. Aloha Power Equipment Sand Island store moved, and they're open. Aloha Power Equipment is so easy to get to. The new mega store is across from Home Depot's Evile parking structure. This is a soft opening, but you'll find all the Aloha Power Equipment you've come to expect to find, like the riding mowers and the robotic mowers and the chainsaws and the weed whackers. Aloha Power Equipment has it all. And the Waipahu store is open. Rainer Door, HawaiiDoor.com to beautify your home, protect your home from the elements, keep your loved ones safe. Get a Rainer garage door, raised panel, recessed panel, garage house designs, flush styling, unmatched strength and durability, and quiet. Have a new garage door installed, a Rainer overhead door. Call 808-676-3667. That's 808-676-DOOR. And find them at HawaiiDoor.com. Sears.com. Sears Electric has been a leader for 40 years in the business of electricians, and they need a few good electricians. Give them a call. It's Sears Electric. The number is 842-1944, extension 23. MD Restoration, flood or fire disaster, you need help. And get in touch with MD Restoration. You should have their number on your fridge. 528-3434. Not only will they help you at the time, they'll help you put it all back together because they're licensed contractors. Thank you for your mama. May you hit the sweet spot every time. I'm Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
You've been listening to the award-winning Golf Club radio show with Danielle Tucker on the Golf Club Network statewide. Tune in next week and we'll tee it up together only on The Golf Club.
Copyright 2021.